the positive perspective, one of the most interesting hours in radio, where we shine the positive light of Jesus Christ on the scriptures, music, our communities, and world issues. We're broadcasting live from Skid Row Studios in beautiful downtown Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Willis Boyd.
And I'm Shantae Duncan.
And you're listening to Positive Perspective. Well, I'm going to start off the show tonight. I got something on my chest and I need to get it off. I saw a commercial on the TV with Cyndi Lauper, and she was talking about gay and transgender homelessness and I guess starving or not eating. And I just thought that was, I thought it was peculiar, because to me that's like black on black crime. What is black on, stop black on black crime? It's no, don't stop black on black crime, stop all crime. And I mean, to, are you going to walk over, and I'll say normal, two normal homeless people to feed a gay or cross-gender or transgender gay person or homeless person? No, you're going to try to feed them all. I don't know of any church or any church that acknowledges Jesus Christ that is going to discriminate. If a man's laying in the gutter with a wig on and ripped nylons and a mini skirt and a beard, I believe that a true Christian is going to offer that man something to eat and shelter if they can. No true Christian or no man of Christ or woman of Christ is going to bypass that person. So why should anybody, I guess, make statements that corral, or, I mean, you want to get your point across or you want to do whatever you want to do, but in my opinion, it's silly to say something like that. And I just had to get that off my chest. Now, on a lighter note,
let's lighten this note up. But just to interject a point, and the point being that if everyone showed just a little more love, despite the purpose of the person that you're trying to show love to, how great a world would this be? How much greater world would this be?
It would
embrace,
be awesome,
everyone.
If we didn't all have a message and we just did what we're supposed to do.
Exactly, or trying to push that hot topic button.
Right.
Which I believe that is really what she was trying to do.
Well, that's what they're all trying to do.
Exactly, so, but focus is wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, like, feed everybody. If you can help somebody, give them a cup of water, do what you can. You don't have to isolate certain, classifications or titles or put those on people. If you're really into helping people, help people. Now, enough of that. Now, go ahead, brother, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in the Bible say we're supposed to love everybody. It don't matter what color, what race, it don't matter. You're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself, bottom line.
Uh-huh.
So with that being said, might not like, I'm not saying me, but if you're homosexual, you know, I might not like what you're doing, but you're still a human being, you know. You got to give the person something.
And
that's just the way I look
at it. That's what the Bible says. The Bible is totally against homosexuality and anything to do with that immorality. And it is. But Jesus taught us to love. And in that love, we have to feed and clothe and do things that we might not necessarily agree with, but to show that love or that spirit of Christ inside of us, we cannot, if we claim him, we cannot step over any person on the street, no matter what they look like or you know, whatever. We have to help them if we do have true God's love in our hearts.
Well,
so,
I think...
Go ahead.
Well, a hungry person is a hungry person. A cold person is a cold person. It doesn't make any difference what their beliefs are, whether they're Christian, they're an atheist, whether they're you know,
dressed
bisexual,
like a man dressed like
a
woman.
Homosexual. If you're hungry, you're hungry. You know, we all have the same feelings in that stomach. We all feel that coldness the same way. So it shouldn't matter. If you're able to help another human being, help that human being.
And even though the Bible is against homosexuality, it's not against love. And it's not what she's saying there. There are a lot of people that would look at that transvestite, I'll say, and hate that person.
Is the organization focused on kids that get kicked out of their homes because they're gay?
Well,
because it's like young people.
The organization is, but there's a lot of, for lack of a better term, straight young people that are kicked out of their mm-hmm. homes because of whatever their beliefs are.
So you handle them if you're straight, and I'll handle them because they're gay. We gotta love each other. And I guess that's what we're saying here, is that God teaches us to love each other. Not everybody agrees with that message that the Bible sends. If you look in your Bible, you will clearly see that, okay? But not everybody agrees with it. Not even Christian people who call themselves Christians agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but enough of this. This is a show all by itself. We are here focusing on Andrea.
Yes.
And her brother, Darren, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, Darren and Andrea. Now, what's the last name?
My name is Andrea Darlene Ross. And the gentleman to my immediate right is my too tall brother, Darren Eric Merritt.
Hey, that's got a nice ring to it.
Yes.
Darren Eric Merritt.
Darren Eric, E-R-I-C,
Eric
Merritt.
Merritt's like something good? Or
like the Merritt Award.
Yeah.
Two R's and two T's.
That's awesome. Anyway, Andrea, you are so awesome, and I'm so glad you guys could make it on the show. I'm going to just kick it off. I'm going to keep it on kind of a light note. We did the 101 club at the Ford Theater.
Yes.
Shante and I, we performed there. You were part of the reading, right?
Yes, I was part of the reading.
And also part of the performance.
And also part of the performance. Yes, I was multitasking that day.
Okay, now, I mean, just to kind of kick it off, can you like do that poem or that song that you do? Can we start off with that?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I believe you kicked it off.
Bobby
Caldwell riff.
I did kick it off, but that's not what's happening tonight. And see, that's what I love about you. It's like, remember when we were rehearsing at the Vortex?
Yes.
And I came in frantic.
Yes, and I calmed you. I calmed you with that calm that I have. I did. And it turned out great.
Yeah, and I said, I'm in a spot. You need to help me out, because I had put the Bobby Caldwell version of the song on
mm-hmm.
the front, and then the Tupac or
right.
Tupac or six pack. Anyway, and I didn't know the words. I forgot them, and I didn't want to blow it in front of everybody. So I says, Andrea, and she says, what is it? I says, what you won't do for love? So when I said, what you won't do for love, what did you say? You had a poem.
I said, that sounds like love madness to me.
Okay, that's what she said. She said, I says, what you won't do for love? That sounds like love madness to me. And I'm like, love madness.
What is that?
Yeah, she says, calm down. Okay,
I calmed down.
So yeah. I came out and I jammed it, and then I gave her cue, and she came out and she killed it. So we're going to try to create that same magic here tonight. Okay. Can you cue up the What You Won't Do For Love? Okay, you know what? This is going to be all right,
I think. That's the pop version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's cool.
Okay, I'm going to cue you when you go ahead and hit
Please
it.
Please do. Crazy, insane, ludicrous, amazing, confusing, and more. What can one say about love? Well, I say it's good when it's bad, but when it's bone-chilling bad, it's so much better. Now you tell me how these opposites tie in, come together. I love you madly, and I am madly in love, but how can this be when they are quite the contrary? You do, you don't, you will, you won't. We're over, we're through, so what do you do? Break up, switch up, and make up again.
What you won't do, hey.
There you go.
Do for love. Okay, I'm gonna hit. You've tried everything, but you won't give up.
What you won't do.
Do for love. You've tried everything, but you won't give up. No.
Crazy. It's wild. And I smile. 'Cause I'm your child. It's crazy. Insane. It's ludicrous. It's amazing, confusing, and more. But tell me, how does one hate and adore the same person today who becomes a stranger tomorrow? Do you remember yesterday's hurt, pain, and sorrow? No, you don't. Well, yes, you should, because you're the one who said it's over. It's no good.
What you won't do, do for love. You've tried everything, but you won't give up. What you won't do, do for love. You've tried everything, but you won't give up.
It's a negative, positive, counter-reaction. Trying to figure out this mad love versus mad hate faction. It's crazy, it's insane. It's ludicrous. It's bizarre by far, because the madness of love is strange. You do, you don't, you will, you won't. We're over, we're through. What do? Make up, switch up, break up again, my friend. I said it's crazy. It's insane and it's ludicrous. Bizarre by far.
Okay, that's it.
Yay.
And that's what happens when you have suffered from a bad case of love madness.
That was awesome. But see, that's what I was telling her. Like, I tell Shantae and people that old school performers, they just did not. I mean, nowadays you run up on these kids. Oh, I can't do that. Or I don't feel like that. Or I cannot. Old school, you had to do everything. They'd sing, they'd dance. If they had an opportunity to do it, they did it. Yeah. And that's what you do. It's like, I come to you, it's like, okay, we'll do it. Okay, figure it out. This and that. And that's what I really admire that about you. And I think that went well. Did it go well? I mean, I was a little off in the beginning, but.
You made up for it in the end. It really sounded okay. Crisp.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and Darren, you got something to say over there? Was that tight?
Oh, it was tight. Yeah. It was tight.
Okay, so, all right, we're going to get into you now. Andrea, tell us a little bit about your upbringing, if you would, if you can.
Okay, I'm the oldest of four siblings. My immediate sister under me, Robin Denise Williams, she's an ordained minister in Statesville, North Carolina at this time. Mm-hmm. My next to oldest brother is Sean Allen Merritt. He is a tractor-trailer operator and a supervisor for the United States Postal Service for the last 13 years. My brother to my right is a graduate of Grambling University in Ruston, Louisiana, class of 1995.
Grambling State University.
Excuse me.
Grambling, Louisiana.
Excuse me. I stand corrected.
1994.
Okay. Majored in?
Social work.
And now currently employed.
LA Unified School District.
Okay. All right.
So we're pretty snappy crew.
Okay.
Two girls and two young men.
Okay. That's well balanced. Mm-hmm. Sort of.
Okay. And let's see. Formerly, we're from the East Coast.
Whereabouts?
New Rochelle, New York is where we were last resided before we headed west to California. Me by way of Hampton Institute in Hampton, Virginia. Mm-hmm. That preceded my coming to California in 1977 to Merced, California. I had a daughter there. Her name is Keisha Breon Ross. She has three children currently, and I have another daughter, Nichelle Avion Jackson. She has one daughter, Chriselle Perkins, and those are my children.
Oh, okay. That's live. And, what else?
Well, let's see. Now, what really is a big part of my life right now, I'm a very active member at Paradise Missionary Baptist Church, located mm-hmm. at 5100 South Broadway in the city of Los Angeles, the Mighty Paradise Baptist Church. And our pastor and leader is Dr. A.D. Iverson. Our assistant pastor is Pastor Kyle Walker. And it has been in L.A. for the past 70 years on that corner.
Wow.
And they are really a community staple. It's a wonderful place to worship. I encourage anyone within the sound of my voice, please come out and see us at Paradise Baptist Church. You will be very well welcomed, very well received, and you will have a good time praising the Lord.
And how did you get involved with the church?
I got involved as a caretaker to Miss Willie Mae Letier.
Willie Mae.
Willie Mae Letier. You met Miss Willie.
We I went met to her, see Bronzeville. I met her, but when I was little, Miss Willie Mae.
Yeah. Oh,
she,
yeah.
She was my babysitter. And she,
yeah, Miss Willie Mae don't play.
Yeah,
you know that, right?
Play.
Yeah, she don't play still, 85 years later. And she will tell you in a minute, I've been in Paradise since 1944.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm not going anywhere. So she's one of the founding members there. And that's by caretaking for her for the last 5 years. I became a part of the membership there, if by not by choice, but by design, I guess. So the Lord led me there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm able to do all the gifts that God enabled me to do. I'm able to put them on display at Paradise, and I just love it.
Okay, that's beautiful. But see, you like, I'm like asking you questions, and you telling me, I'm from the East Coast. Now you jump into right now. Did nothing happen in between?
I served in the United States Air Force at McGuire Air Force Base.
So you're a veteran.
I am a veteran, 108 TAC Hospital, a medical service specialist at in 1975 to 1977 prior to coming to California. Also worked.
Army, was that a good experience for you, being in the Army? Or?
Well, Air Force, it was a good experience that actually brought me to California with transferred out to Castle Air Force Base from McGuire Air Force Base in 1977. Because I always wanted to come to sunny California.
Is it everything you thought it would be?
And more. It really is. And what really prompted me, I could just tell you. O.J. Simpson, Marcus Allen, and all you guys that used to be in the Rose Bowl on January 1st every year. You guys would have on your shades and your short sleeve shirts and your shorts, and me and my brother would be over our heads in snow. And I'm looking, I said,
And he's tall.
He's 6'7". That's a lot of snow. So I said, Lord, if I ever get the chance, I am going to move to California. And that's really what prompted me to want to come here.
Listening to a radio show, and they were saying that about the Rose Bowl, that it does. Inspire a lot of people to come out here.
It really does.
Go on.
Okay, so in seeing and doing all of that, and I finally landed here in 1977. I came to Southern California in 1975. I worked 11 years at Compton Unified School District as a school bus operator, and a lot of the kids that I bused in, they still coming to me now, Miss Ross. I mean, so I guess I made an impression on them. They're working. They're doing things. Miss Ross, you always told us this. You inspired us. You let us listen to our music. You know, I was the quote unquote, air quote, cool bus driver.
Oh.
So that really prompted me to get into writing and just trying to be the heartbeat, you know, to stay in step with what they're trying to do. And that's how I developed a lot of the writing that
I've
done.
Talking about the community, you're talking about the community that you were working in.
Yes, in the Compton School District, in the Compton community, South Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. From there, I went to the United States Postal Service. I worked there as a motor vehicle operator for 17 and a half years prior to embarking on my career as an actress slash writer slash poet. And author of children's literature, which I do now do.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of your work. It's very impressive.
Yes, and I do want to. You have a series of puppets that you and
Positive Light.
Positive Light.
And that one over there, too.
Denise.
That
yes.
one.
Oh my God, I was so impressed with that I really would like to collaborate at some point on doing the books that I've created.
Right.
Bringing the puppets in, you know, to go to the preschools and to the community churches. because there's positive themes in the books that I write, and I just want to embrace the children because, after all, that is our future.
Yeah, you should hook up with Melvin. There's something coming up here in just a little bit. He emailed me about a puppet extravaganza thing coming up, and they're looking for stories that are positive. I'm not...
We can network and stuff.
Okay, great. Well, yeah. Please keep me informed, and I really knew that. I really would love to be a part of that.
Well, I was saying, we've done puppets for a very, very long time, and, you know, when you're busy and stuff, it's hard. I usually write my own scripts when we do a show and and stuff, but if you have your book...
Yeah, I wrote the screenplay to the book.
Yeah, you already have a story.
Yes, already ready.
And all
to
you need is the puppets.
I just need the puppets, the actual hands-on puppets.
Yeah, we could get together and do that kind
of
thing.
Develop that, because I see that as, you know, my grandchildren, I've been doing these stories with them since they were, like, 5 and 6 months old. They're now 10, 12, and 6, respectively. And I tell you, and I'm not just saying this because I wrote it, the developmental educational system that I developed with these characters, they're all straight A, honor roll, since the time they stepped into school. One is sixth grade, one is fourth grade, one is first grade. They have all consecutive honor roll appearances in their matriculation at school. So I'm very proud of them, and I do think that the book that I have developed had a lot to do with them. Their focus at a young age, because 0 to 5 is the most development that your brain is going to have. 90% of its development is done from 0 to 5.
Yeah, I think it's the interacting, though, with the person who's holding the book.
True.
It's probably, whether it's a good book or a bad book, there's, you know, the interaction of that person is
with that child.
Influences that child in either way.
It does. Well, okay. That's my biggest passion.
Well, we're brothers and sisters. We love each other and we know each other and stuff. So, but I want to maybe touch on something a little dark in your life about abusive relationships. If you want to talk about that. I would kind of like you to hit on that a little bit if you want.
Yeah, well, you know, personally, I had termed it being a prisoner in my own life. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a play, I'm writing a book, and that's the title, and that is what it is when you suffer in the silence of domestic violence. I am a survivor, a 26-year survivor. I liberated myself in 2008, but it was not easy. It was complicated. It meant leaving everything that I knew had acquired. Houses, cars, wardrobes, TV, you name it, I had it. But materialistically, I was wealthy. But spiritually, I was bankrupt. So I had to make a choice. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go forward bankrupt but happy? I chose to be happy and bankrupt. Because I'm right now billionaire. Mm-hmm. Billionaire in my spirit. Wouldn't change a thing that I did. All I had was my purse, a postal uniform on, and a dream. And I'm so much closer to it now than I ever thought I would ever be. Mm-hmm. I used to question God. I used to be angry. I'll be honest. I was angry. Lord, Jesus, will I ever be happy? You know, after 26 years. And it just seemed like it was further and further away. But the further it was away from me, it really was the closer it was to me, because I had a foster son also of 11 years, and he was the last really remnant holding me into that cavern. Mm-hmm. And once he was repatriated with his family, the very next day, with a purse and my uniform, I went, resigned from my job, left everything I knew for 4 years, just went off the radar, left all everything I knew to be true, family, friends, to re-edify myself. And I guess I call it my faith walk or my Job moment. That's what I likened it to. Joe Better. That's what I used to call it. Oh, this is my Joe Better moment. Yes, it was. But just like Joe was rich and then he lost it all, but the only thing he did not lose was his faith in God. He was skin over bones, almost a cadaver. Mm-hmm. But he held on to his faith in God, and I liken myself to that. And now in the transition and the re-edification on the other side, that light at the end of the tunnel is no longer an oncoming train. It's the marvelous light of the Lord, and I'm happy about that. So, yes, I speak about it, but I let you know on the other side, there is another side to the black eyes and the broken bones and the discouragement and the low self-esteem and just the abyss of nothingness. There is God on the other side of all that. You just got to hold on. So if anyone out there within the sound of my voice right now is standing in that muck and mire of dysfunctionality, just keep on keeping on, keep praying, keep looking up to the hills from whence comes the help, because a city hidden on a hill cannot be hidden. So keep your eyes up and keep striving for the prize, because in the end, God is going to win.
So how did your, you know, like your brother Darren react to it when you said you went off the radar all the way? I mean, you know, family, you sound like you were a pretty close-knit family, and all of a sudden you're just like, poof, gone.
Yeah, well, you know what? I can say this in truth and honesty. Domestic violence lends itself to being off the radar. The controlling mechanism of the other person in that relationship, they don't want you to have friends. They don't want you to have relationship with your family, your church, nothing. You're just cut off. Like I said, you're a prisoner in your own life. Literally, that's what I had become. So although they were there, I never let them know. You suffer in silence. You suffer in shame because you don't want them to know, you know, you're being abused and battered within an inch of your life on any given occasion. You don't. You suffer in silence.
So when you left, did you get closer to your family then after you left?
After I came out from the shroud of shame and everything that I felt that I was not. Yes, I did. I reached out. And, of course, being the family that they were right there for me. Of course. And they always would have been had I lent myself to that atmosphere. But I did not want to subject them to what I was going through. It's just, you know, me, him, and God. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
My mom, you know, I just couldn't do it. So, like I said, it's not just me. This is just like one of the symptoms of domestic violence is suffering in silence because you just shame. You don't want anybody to know.
That's what I've heard from some other guests that we've had when they talk about domestic violence is that it's something, like you said, you're ashamed when you feel like you're the one that's at fault when you're the victim.
Exactly.
But you don't tell anybody what's going on when there's hands out there to help. If they only knew.
If they only knew. But that's the point. They don't know. Mm-hmm. And then when they see you, oh, you're smiling on the outside. But a smile on the outside does not always indicate. Sometimes on the inside, we're perpetrate. That's a line in one of my poems called Lesson.
You know what? I was kind of thinking that had a nice ring to it.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask if it influenced your writing. But
it does. Yeah. It does. Everything I've been going through or have gone through, and my writing is clearly reflective of everything that I went through. Love Madness is a clear example. You know, how does the same person today is a stranger tomorrow? Don't you remember yesterday's hurt, pain, and sorrow? No, you don't. Well, yes, you should, because you're the one who said, it's not working, it's over, it's no good. But 24 hours later, you can't be without him, and she cannot breathe without you. So I'm through. So it's crazy. Yeah. That's where that came from. That's okay. Part of it.
We're going to cut to announcements and then we'll be back. So you can see what's going on. Now it's time to take a look at what's going on and where you can get it going on. The best impressions start at home. Elite furniture for affordable prices. It's Live in Large Furniture. Contact Richard Boyd at 951-214-8555. Drama Stage Qumran has a weekly Veterans Theater workshop led by Melvin Ishmael Johnson and Earlene Anthony. It's Wednesday nights from 4 to 6 p.m. A free course in playwriting, stage managing, and more. If you'd like more information, you can contact Melvin Johnson at 213-908-6567 or email him at dramastage1@yahoo.com. And Positive Light is back with the kayak. If you know anything about our history, then you'll know that we take the kids kayaking, or we try to. We have a history of doing this, and the fundraiser is set for August 22nd, and the actual event is for September 19th. So mark that in your calendars. We take inner city kids, out of city kids. Everyone is invited for this event. So get excited, and I plan to attend. We'd like to thank Jeremy for helping us out tonight. Doing a great job, and really appreciate it. Thank you. If you'd like to be a part of our show through sponsorship, you can call us at 951-789-1046. To learn more about our nonprofit organization, it's called Positive Light Ministries. And make a donation, you can visit our website, positivelight.org, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/wearepositivelight. And now back to our discussion.
Great job, Shante. Okay, now I'm going to shift a little bit here. Now, you say you're from the East Coast, New York?
Yes, New Rochelle, New York.
Okay, was there racism there? Did you guys grow up in a...
I don't know. I was too young, so I don't know.
You were too young to... Yeah.
How about when you were in the South, going to school or any time?
Well, it was plenty down there.
Oh, okay. Plenty.
And when was this? What years are you talking?
Just say from 89 and 94, because, you know, some things happened to me down there, too, so...
What, 84?
I mean, from 89 and 94, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, still, 89? That's yeah. like... That's not like 64.
Exactly.
Or 54? Civil rights. What are you talking about,
you
man?
You said it was little.
No, he no. said this was...
When
this
you were
was
in college.
College time?
Can you share one antidote, well, one I can, incident?
I mean, if it's not too...
Oh, it ain't no biggie.
Graphic.
All right, one time, me and a buddy of mine was in a bank in a town called Arcadia, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And my boy was going in there to cash his check. So I had a check, too. I wanted to know what I had to do to join this bank so I can cash my check. So we get to the counter, and the president of the bank said, y'all come back in my office. I want to talk to y'all. So we go back. He was a white man. So we went back in his office, and we started talking to him. And me and my boy, we sit next to each other. And the man from the bank, he just opened his drawer up, and he pulled a gun out, and he pointed it right at me.
What?
And I'm like, get out of this bank. You know, only thing I could do, just throw my hands up in the air,
mm-hmm.
and just start walking backwards. I was scared, you know?
Yeah.
And my uh-huh. friend, he just sat there, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I get out the bank, and I'm thinking my friend behind me, he's still in the bank, you
uh-oh.
Know?
Uh-huh.
And then when he finally came outside, man, how come he didn't get up and come out when I came out, you know? When uh-huh. that man pulled that gun. I forgot what he told me. I don't know what he said.
Uh-huh.
But still, you're not supposed to have a gun. Only person supposed to have a gun in the bank is the security.
Oh.
So there you go right there.
Well,
I didn't do nothing. South. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was crazy.
Oh, okay. Now, I touched
that's some
that.
Racism for you.
Yeah, but
there you go.
Andrea, she's got some issues about a lot of things. Matter of fact, we were discussing today about that picnic. Is it is that a poem you do? Is it a poem?
Yes, it is.
Okay, now you know what? You can go ahead and say the N word. Okay,
yeah, that one real deep too. I like it. It's deep, but it's real.
It is
if
real.
If I
but
can impress
a lot of,
my baby brother uh-huh. and to get a compliment out of him, it's like pulling eye teeth with no anesthesia. So if he compliments me, it had to be touching.
Deep.
So that really drives me when I hear him compliment, because I know it had to be something.
We were discussing today that, and now when you said they, now I feel really weird saying this word, so I won't say it the way most people say it. When you pick a Negro, and they picked a Negro, and they killed the Negro, and then did they eat the Negro?
Well, first they burnt the Negro.
Okay.
Then they ate the Negro. Some. Would you like
they
to
didn't
do
eat
it?
All of them. They just took little.
And they carved and ate them like a roast.
Yeah, like roasting a pig, basically. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Now, was I wrong?
No, I'm saying from what I was reading, it was saying it was like an entertainment thing. Like they bring food and watch them get lynched or something.
That's where picnics come from.
That's
yeah.
Go I to need to recite this poem.
Okay.
Because you can really.
Go ahead and do it.
The tenor is there. And what you're saying, you. People, please. Do I give a disclaimer because I'm going to use these inflammatory remarks? I'm sorry. But if you really want to know the truth, and you might want to know why some of us
wait
are
a second,
so
wait,
angry.
I'm sorry. If you have little kids watching, you might want to you know.
That's why I'm giving a disclaimer. Oh, having yeah. children.
Oh, I thought
that might
you
be ear sensitive.
Yeah.
What I'm about to share with you, though it may be a little sensitive, it really strikes to the core of why some people really are in hate of other races in this country, in America. And this poem is entitled Picnic. Can you tell me, and do you know how this simple word was derived? Can you take 1 minute, and do you have the time to let me re-educate and impact your mind? Can you even stand it? Do you want the real? Well, listen up, because Miss Andrea is about to drop history's dark, dirty deal. Now, picnic, defined, it is an occasion of merriment and fun. But naked truth is going to reveal a much uglier one. You see, way back in those years when blacks were slaves and considered 3/5 of a human and white man's property, we had no face, we had no voice, no self-autonomy. We became the highlight, the main event at their weekend jamboree. Now, with great zeal and pride, massa came to choose a prime candidate to humor the audience and entertain the crowd and suffer a demonic fate. So massa came to pick a nigga. Pick a nigga, most anyone would do. Pick a nigga, watch them burn at their weekend barbecue. Now everyone did gather around, the little women and children too. Some even took pictures, admiring death's view. Others, they thought them tasty. They carved and ate them like a roast. While others raised their glasses, ha-ha, for a brutish, hearty toast. Unbelievable, unimaginable, insane, insidious. Yes, it's all so very true. So the next time you or you or you go to a picnic, you remember that that horrible past is sitting at that picnic table right along with you and you and you and yes, even you too. Thank you.
That is so, that's, I mean, the first time I think it was on a Qumran report.
It was.
When I heard that. And it really was unbelievable.
Unimaginable.
But, yeah, but the things you hear that happen in Africa, what the French did over there and the English did over there, using blacks as skeets for the skeet shooting, making them run and shooting them with shotguns and, and just...
The atrocities.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have these tree-hugging, dog-kissing, la-la-land people thinking that man is so good, you know, that we are not evil, you know, that we're good-natured people and this and that. It's like, it's hard to understand it. But, I mean, we understand it because we know that we are born into sin.
Yeah.
But... at the same time, it's hard for some white people to understand why a lot of black people just can't get over it.
Why are so angry and bitter.
And why they just can't move on. And, I mean, I'm not one for Black History Month. I think we should, Black History Month should
it's
be every day.
It is.
But I'm not also one for, you know, you don't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. But I think history is very important and interesting. I think Christ Jesus, which is history.
He is history. He is the history of the world.
I think that is more important, that we are able to free ourselves through that, whether he be black or Asian or whatever color that some people think it's important that he's a color, that Jesus was black, and that's important to them. But to me, it's not important because it's about what he taught. It's not necessarily if he was plaid, you know. What did he teach, and can we do or try to
emulate?
Right.
Well, it's the reason. What was Jesus sent down here to accomplish? So does it really matter what color he was or anything. He was sent here so that we had a path to go back to get to heaven to be with the Father.
Exactly.
You know, so it didn't really matter what he looked like. It's what did he do and why did he do it?
Why?
And I go ahead, brother.
Well, I'm going to go against the grain a little bit.
Go ahead.
I mean, you know, I believe in Jesus too, and I know what he stands for, but if we got to look at the things he said and he did, well, how come it can't be like that today? Why do we have, according to the Bible, we're not supposed to have images of him in the church windows, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you want to get technical about it, in the Bible, it said it was the color of brass, you know, like a burnt brass. And his hair was like wool. So if you want to get real technical about it, all these movies we see, Ben-Hur and all that, mm-hmm. Charlton Heston, mm-hmm. I'm not racist now. They come white as they come, you know?
Well, yeah.
Be real about it. If you're going to tell a story, tell the truth about it.
Well, that's
exactly.
I'm taking what you're saying is the truth, and I'm taking it well, but what I'm saying is it doesn't matter when you get down to it. To me, when people throw things like color into that, it's a stumbling block. And they're looking at a color rather than the truth or the teaching of what's going on. They're like, well, Jesus wasn't white, he was black. So, yeah, I mean, it's good for us to look and see, have role models that are the same color that we are, and probably that's why they don't show them as being black, because they don't want us to have positive role models, and I understand that too. But when you get into what's being taught and Jesus, who he is, there is no color there. And when you see that there's no color, that's when I believe the true power starts.
Well, I think if you know...
Darren.
Oh, I was going to say, well, I don't go for the color neither, but I'm just saying, you know, how society is, even though I don't agree with society all the way, but... You know, I look at the Lord as, I don't look at a color neither. You know, I just do what the Bible tells me to do, and that's all I know. But on the other hand, just tell the truth, you know, the truth will set you free.
You know,
it's just a...
I got you.
He just creates an image when he's looks that way. Is that what you're saying?
Well...
It's a lie they want us to believe.
Mankind just messes up everything, basically. Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line.
Truly.
And when I say mankind, I'm talking about society. But mm-hmm. you just got to worship. This is just me. I just read the book. Whatever the book say, I try to do. That's all mm-hmm. I do. You know, I made a lot of mistakes and still going to make some.
As we all have. Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying hard every day to live like the Lord. And that way, this is just me. I love everybody. I care about people. I'm trying to get to the kingdom. That's all I'm trying to do. So I have to do what I need to do. To get there. For me to get there, I'm going to have to obey this Bible, you know? And mm-hmm. he knows I'm going to mess up here and there. But overall, I know one day he's going to say, you didn't do everything I told you to do, but you did
good,
some
son.
Of the things, you know.
Well, you won't even have to explain yourself, because when he sent Christ down here, he took care of all that. I mean, and God don't even see it no more. It's in the deepest part of the ocean. Mm-hmm.
And the sea of forgetfulness.
Right, and you won't even have to because of what Christ did, you know, so.
What I was going to say, anybody with any kind of common sense, you know, there's no way you're going to have a blonde-haired, blue-eyed person.
On the hottest continent.
Coming out of the Middle East and Africa. That just
continent.
Wasn't,
it's
you
not
know,
theoretically possible.
You know, that's just if you look at the history of what the people that lived in there, and Christ came, you know, from a woman that lived in that area. Yeah. She's not going to produce.
But his dad didn't live there.
Well, understand that, but she's not going to produce that. He would have stood out, and that's not the purpose. He was to mingle in as a commoner. You know,
yes.
So if he'd have been blonde hair, blue eyed, and you know, as white like as my skin, he'd have looked weird.
Exactly.
You know, it would have looked like. That would have been the king that the Jews and a lot of the people were looking for. They weren't looking for the commoner that was coming through there, and that's what he came as.
I think it's Isaiah 3. Is it Isaiah 3 verses 1 through 4 describes? I think it's Isaiah 3. but it describes him as being a man with no form, like a root from the desert. He wasn't anybody special. He just
right. He was a commoner. He just looked like all the rest of the people that were in that area.
Exactly.
Okay, now. Okay, we got a little time. Shoot.
Oh, I was going to ask if you had anything that you're working on now. Anything new? Poems or writing, books?
Yeah, I'm trying hard to get this book about semi-autobiographical, but it's more of a teaching tool as far as the domestic violence. The one that I spoke on, Prisoner of My Own Life, I don't know if I want it to be a book form or if I want to be in play form. You know, maybe have several young ladies, everyone stand up and tell their tale of horror.
Yeah, they have things like
you
that
know,
at
things
my school.
Like that. So, I'm on the fence about the platform that I want to utilize to bring the story forward. But that's what I'm working on currently because I got to get it out. 2008 is 7 years, so it's time for me to just get it out. That's my therapy.
So it's finalized. You're just trying to find a way that you want
to. Which way to steer? What genre? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a play form? Am I going to write a book about it first and then do the play?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the fence about it, but the emotion and the terror and everything is still there. Book, play, poem, it doesn't matter. You know, when it's from the heart and it's an emotion that you're trying to put on paper for someone else to emote with, then it doesn't matter the genre. It's going to be there if the emotion is there behind it. That's what catapults.
Can I regurgitate something that you said earlier about being a bus driver in Compton?
Mm-hmm.
The heartbeat, the pulse, the inspiration, or the light, or that you tried to be for the children. Not tried, but that you were for the children. And you said that was something that inspired you to write. Now, am I wrong in saying that that's when your writing first started, or?
No.
Okay.
My mother, she had writings from when I was 4 and 5 still in her basement when she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long I've been writing. But as a formal occupation, writing became my therapy when I transitioned from jail to freedom. So all the angst and all just everything that I had bottled up inside of me, because my mind races as a creative person. You're full of thoughts, you know. So once I started to try to put them all together, the convoluted thoughts that I had racing through my mind, it became a challenge to get it on paper and then into a computer. So it's always been there, but I've developed it to a degree since I've liberated myself and been able to go after my dreams and goals. It's in high gear right now. It's been in high gear since 2007.
Okay, now, when you go back, though, to being the bus driver, can you spit anything that you were inspired from back in that time?
And this is really crazy that you would say that. In 1985, I used to drive. It used to be a school in Compton Unified called Tubman. It was for teen mothers, girls that had gotten pregnant and were still in school and trying to still matriculate and graduate.
Mm-hmm.
I think the youngest young lady that rode the bus, she was 11.
Mm.
Not with one, but two children.
Mm.
And then I had another young lady that was 15, and she had three children. And we're talking 85 here. We're not talking about, we're talking about 30 years ago. And the most popular piece that I do called What's Real, I wrote that piece in 1985. I just performed that piece 2 weeks ago at my church for Black History Month. For the 90s decade, they were talking about Tupac and Biggie and rappers. Brought the house down with something I wrote back in 85. Just changed a couple of words.
Well, can you bring the station down?
You want me to bring the station down?
Wait a minute. Would that be all right?
Is that too much?
He said you can bring it down.
Jeremy said I could bring the station down.
He gave me permission.
Oh, he gave me permission. Well, thank you, Jeremy. I want the radio station to know that this is Miss AD, formerly out of the NYC. Now I'm coming at you from LA's infamous CPT, getting ready to drop a trilogy, a little social commentary, otherwise known as What's Real. Check this out. I'm telling you what's real. I ain't telling no lie. It's a day-to-day struggle in the ghetto. Here's why. Man child born to an underage mother. Before he got a name, the little kid, he got a number. At a county office in that welfare line, mama sits all day for pennies, nickels, quarters, dimes, bored waiting till the whole day is through. The social worker thinks she got nothing else to do. They got mad stories told on a thousand faces. Futuristic slavery of the minority races. Chained to a system that is bound to fail. But you don't give a damn because your EBT is in the mail. But it's mental, G-E-N-O side. You know the deal. Ain't telling no lies. I'm strictly telling what's real. The devil got a plan. Black mind kill. I ain't telling no lie, G. Telling what's real. I'm telling you. What's real? Miss A.D. is spelling to Y-O-U, and you just what is real. So peep my game, because I B.E. speaking it, B.E. teaching it, B.E. preaching it, B.E. because it's so real. I'm telling to you, it's spelling to Y-O-U, what's real. Now check this out. Her child grows up. He want to be a man at the age of 9, a Mac 10 in his hand. He ain't seen his daddy since he was 3. Don't even know that fool's name, but they spelled it T-R-E-E. The story goes, Tree was tall, stout, yoked up, tattered, ripped, knocking niggas out. He was devastating on that trigger twist, pin your cap, straight to your grave for your R.I.P. nap. But late one night in the hood of South Park, pop, 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 rang out in the dark. Tree got off a couple, but he was overmatched. Just like that. His life was snatched. Now his mama's left here, burying her son. Another tragedy, yet it's only one of those scandalous tales yet to be revealed. I ain't telling no lie, G. I'm telling what's real, and I'm telling you what's real. Miss A.D. is spelling to Y-O-U, and you just what is real? Peep my game, because I B.E. addressing it, B.E. professing it, B.E. confessing it, B.E. because it's so real. Telling to you and spelling to Y-O-U what's real. Look what happened to him now. His childhood lost, that's the number one fact. Front gangster style, don't know how to act. Instead of games like hide-and-go-seek, game was ditching school 5 days a week. Heated, hanging out on the block scene. Pants sagging low, yo, trying to be mean. Want to be tough, want to be bad. Want to have things that daddy never had. Rope chain, dope chain, Versace, Vuitton. Where, oh, where have those simple days gone? Jacking ill and then chilling. Almost killing on the run, lying, crying, inside dying. Dying to be. Way back when, he stood 1 inch from mama's chin, cuz now, lessons are learned the hard way. Locked down doing time, day by day, 10 years. Stretched him out and gave him 10 years. Put them bracelets on him for 10 years. He put his mama through hell, staring at baby boo in a jail cell. 10 years till you know how great your freedom do feel. I ain't telling Y-O-U no lie, I'm telling Y-O-U what's real. The devil got a plan, terminal. Black mind kill. I ain't telling no lie, people. I'm just spitting what's real. Thank you. 1985. That came into being, and it's still ringing true.
Oh, man.
Right now. I wrote that in 85.
Yeah.
This is 2015.
Yeah, and it's
30 years, and yeah. It's still
timeless.
It's a classic. Like Marvin Gaye, what's going on? It's the same thing. Was real.
Yeah.
It's in that tenor. So those are some of my...
Okay, we're going to wind down last minute. Any last minute remarks, Miss Andrea?
God is good. If you out there within the sound of my voice, keep striving, keep arriving, because God is real and he's working the deal. Thank you.
I was just going to say thank y'all for having me tonight. I really enjoyed it. I'd like to come back again if y'all would allow me.
Oh, we would. We would. Niece?
Well, I just thank both of you. You know, Andre, you're always a pleasure to be around.
Thank you so much.
What comes out of your mouth sometimes just amazes me and stuff. You know, I mean, I've heard a lot of your poems and stuff, and it's like, that's not one of my talents that I have at all, you know, and to hear someone speak like that is just wonderful.
Thank you, Denise. God bless you for that.
Yes, I want to thank you guys for coming out and you for sharing your art.
Okay, absolutely. And thank you.
Where's your... I didn't see the notebook or the... I didn't see none of that stuff.
That's because it's all in my head between the left and the right ear and the gray matter. You keep it there.
Do you have the prompter? Is there a prompter on that side?
No.
God is prompting me forward.
Okay. I'm going to say in closing is we're never more like our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ than when we are loving, forgiving, and creating.
Amen. Thank you for tuning in to Positive Perspective.